Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. I'm Ann Clark, a member of the Commonwealth Club and chair of Environment and Natural Resources member-led forum. Our program tonight is very special, Greening the World Through Sports. It is with great pleasure that I introduce Alan Hershkovitz, who is Director of Sports Greening Project Natural Resources Defense Council, who will be our moderator and introduce our panel. Alan?
Thanks, Ann. Hello, everybody. It really is a real privilege and really an honor to speak at the Commonwealth Club here. The folks, Dalai Lama, Martin Luther King, the people who have spoken here is just really astounding. So it really is just a great, great honor to be here. We have a wonderful panel of some folks who have helped launch and still maintain the sports greening movement in the United States and actually globally, people who have dedicated their careers towards environmental stewardship and figuring out how to get the message. I'll introduce them in a minute. What I want to do is just basically give you some background on how the sports greening project at NRDC got launched and how the sports greening movement has evolved. I'll do that very briefly, and then we'll turn to our panelists. I don't really need to remind the folks in this room, judging by some of the familiar faces that I see out there, about the urgent ecological issues that we're facing. We are literally undermining the functional integrity of the biosphere. Life on Earth, species are going extinct at a historic rate. We're destabilizing the chemistry of the atmosphere. We're placing extraordinary pressure on our oceans, marine debris, plastic debris, massive strip mining of the seas, fishing, coastal development, ocean pollution, acidification, deforestation, water scarcity. Colorado River is at the lowest levels it's been since records began being kept almost 100 years ago. 30 million people get their water supply from the Colorado. As we know, it no longer reaches the Pacific Ocean. Lake Mead is half empty. It'll never be full again. It supplies all the water to Las Vegas. Biodiversity, water, oceans, climate disruption. We're walking around, actually, there's sort of a mass psychosis out there, operating business as usual, not paying attention to what we're doing to the planet. You know, how should we relate to the organism that gives us air to breathe and water to drink? We're really not getting our message out effectively, given we're still relying overwhelmingly on environmentally ignorant technologies. Back in 2004, I was at a board retreat, a retreat of NRDC's Board of Trustees. It was held at the home of one of our trustees, Robert Redford, in Sundance. And we met at the time because some of you may remember back in during the Bush administration, the White House was actually changing the language of EPA Science Advisory Board reports. They were trying to cast doubt on climate science. They were trying to convince people that really it was a controversial theory rather than scientific consensus. So we met at Redford's place to figure out how do we get the message out? How do we counter the power of the White House who's trying to corrupt information regarding climate science? And Redford said, you know what, we got to go to a baseball game. I mean, that's how he says, we got to go to a football game. We got to be at basketball games. He says, we got to interact with sports. And this was just a few of us there. And actually, the year before, a year previous to the meeting at Redford's place, I worked with Robin Raj, who's here tonight, and a few other people on the greening of Lincoln Financial Field, which is the football stadium used by the Philadelphia Eagles football team. We didn't really call it the greening of Lincoln Financial Field at the time. We got contacted by the owners of the team, Jeffrey and Christina Lurie, environmentally responsible people. The colors of the team are green. They wanted to promote recycling. Mostly they wanted to reduce the carbon impacts associated with the operations of the stadium. There was this had never been done before. There was never any on-purpose initiative prior to that focused on greening a professional sports stadium. So when I got called in and Robin came, we just sort of had to wing it. We just basically said, well, how do you do this? Well, we basically said, well, there's water impacts. Let's look at those. There's food impacts. Let's look at those. There's energy impacts. Let's look at those. There's transportation impacts. There's textiles. There's plastics. There's the potential to reach fans. Let's basically put together a list of all the impacts and the opportunities and see, you know, how do we reduce the impacts and maximize the opportunities. So we thought it was a one-off. I thought it was a one-off. And actually, what was really interesting about that, and you'll hear more from Robin about this, but that was where Robin, Raj, invented the environmental public service announcement for sports stadiums and arenas. And he has since gone on to produce many public service announcements for professional sports since that time. But we thought it was a one-off. And actually, so at Redford's place during lunch, I said, you know, he calls himself Bob, so we call him Bob. And I said, Bob, you know, I worked on this greening of Lincoln Financial Field. You know, maybe we could, you know, do that in other places. Maybe we could, you know, start a little project at NRDC and roll out this sports greening idea. And he said, any way you want me to help, let me know. And sitting at the table when I was speaking with him was another trustee of NRDC, Bob Fisher, who is an owner of the Oakland Athletics baseball team. And Bob Fisher said, you know, Alan, if you write a letter to Bud Selig, I'll get it to him. So this was the fall of 2004. I wrote a letter to Bud Selig. Bob Fisher got it to Bud Selig. And basically within 10 days of me sending the letter, I got a call from John McHale, the executive vice president of operations of Major League Baseball, who said, the commissioner is interested in this. Would you please come in and talk to us about what you want to do regarding environmental enhancement at Major League Baseball stadiums? And I had no idea really what to do. So I called Robin, and I said, what do we do? And Robin says, well, we should, you know, produce a video that will basically show them what we're going to do. Let's show them what we did at Lincoln Financial Field, and let's connect the dots. Let's show them the operations at the stadium and then show them the upstream impacts associated with those operations. And we had 10 days, literally, to produce this video because we had this meeting with these executives at Major League Baseball. So Darby Hoover, my colleague at NRDC, who's going to be speaking to you tonight, Darby and I put together this draft script for Robert Redford. Which Robin Raj then edited, and we sent it out, and Robin videotaped Redford, and we used the logo of Major League Baseball illegally. We used the music from The Natural illegally. We used library footage from Major League Baseball illegally. We had this illegal film that I was going to go in and show, which I did go in and show to Major League Baseball. But it was a beautiful film, and it was narrated by Redford. And, you know, Major League Baseball thinks that the film The Natural is a documentary. They love Robert Redford. You know, they just are crazy for Robert Redford. So having him narrate it gave us a lot of validation, and we had the NRDC logo next to Major League Baseball logo, and we showed it to them, and they said, great, we love it. What's next? And we went out and we produced a greening advisor for Major League Baseball, and Robin was instrumental in that, and Darby and I worked for 2 years, and we spent really about $750,000 putting together a greening advisor, which was team-specific, location-specific, environmental information about every single environmental impact associated with a sporting event, everything from team travel to food to transportation to water to energy. And if you were in Los Angeles, it gave you the phone number of the recycling companies and the utilities in Los Angeles, and if you were in Baltimore, it gave you the phone numbers in Baltimore, and we put it out there for the commissioner to give to the teams as the commissioner's initiative in sustainability. So the greening of professional baseball took off. And I knew that this was a huge coup for us because what it did was it depoliticized the dialogue about climate disruption. Suddenly we had Bud Selig, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, saying that global climate disruption, global warming matters to baseball. It's real and it matters. Now, there are people who, you know, challenge climate science. And, you know, let's just say Senator Inhofe from, one of our favorite, you know, climate, you know, deniers. He could attack the National Academy of Sciences with impunity, but he cannot attack Bud Selig. And he cannot attack Roger Goodell or Gary Bettman or Don Garber. And basically, David Stern, of course. So what's happened is David Stern, who's been a member of NRDC since 1988, heard about our work with MLB and invited us in. So we start to work with the National Basketball Association. The NBA shares 9 arenas with the National Hockey League. So we got invited in by Gary Bettman to work with the National Hockey League. Billie Jean King heard about our work, called us up and said, "I've always wanted to meet you guys." I mean, that's the first thing Billie Jean King said. "I've always wanted to meet you." It's like, you got to be kidding. And it was, and of course, the U.S. National Tennis Center is named after Billie. And when it got her name, she wanted to make it socially and environmentally responsible. So we greened the U.S. Open. Major League Soccer came on board, and we also advise the National Football League. NRDC advises more leagues and teams on environmental issues than any organization in the world. We're very proud of that. And what we do is we help harmonize the messages to the marketplace by these leagues. One of the things that we did, one of the things that I'm most proud of, actually, is we worked with Paul Allen's Vulcan Corporation in co-founding the Green Sports Alliance. The Green Sports Alliance was initially formed by a handful of teams from 4 or 5 leagues in the Pacific Northwest. Literally 5 or 6 teams. Justin Zollner from Rose Garden Arena and the Portland Trailblazers is one of the founders of the Green Sports Alliance. It now has 160 team and venue members and 16 leagues, and is one of the most influential organizations in the world on sports greening. So all Juul events, the World Series, the Super Bowl, the U.S. Open Tennis Championships, the Stanley Cup, the NBA Finals, the NBA Playoffs, all of these events now incorporate environmental stewardship and messaging into their agenda. Now, let me just say this, and then I'm going to bring it over to the panel. 13% of Americans follow science. 61% of Americans follow sports. Okay, and if we need to get our message out, we've got to do whatever we can. We've got to go where people are. If you want to change the world, you don't emphasize how different you are from everybody else. You've got to be where they are. And a lot of folks, you know, never really thought about using sports. And to me, it's bewildering. It's such a culturally potent institution, sector. In fact, it's a huge market sector, about $450 billion. Every industry, the plastics industry, the paper industry, the textile industry, the food industry, the beverage industry, the auto industry, all industries meet at sporting events, either as suppliers or as sponsors. So when we get Major League Baseball or the NFL or National Basketball Association to make messaging, to message to the marketplace about environmentally intelligent products, it resonates globally. So tonight we're going to hear from folks who have helped build this movement, people who are still building this movement, people who have been instrumental. Some of the Robin Raj are arguably the most influential visionary in terms of messaging, mass audience messaging. I mean, remember, we're talking about hundreds of millions of people. Half the planet watched the London Olympics. Okay, we're talking about, 400 million people are connected to the NBA by social media. That's 5% of the population on Earth. The potential is huge. Darby Hoover, the technical backbone of NRDC, many projects at NRDC, but certainly our sports project. There's a lot of things that come out of my office, but there's not much that comes out without Darby taking a look at it first. And Justin Zoller, who is the senior vice president at the Rose Garden Arena, in charge of public affairs and sustainability. The Rose Garden Arena was the first professional sporting venue to get LEED certified. For those of you who don't know, and I'm sure everybody knows LEED, Leadership in Environment and Energy Design. So we're going to turn it over to Justin Zoller, who's going to talk to you about what the Rose Garden Arena has been doing. Then we're going to hear from Robin, and then we're going to hear from Darby.
Thank you, Alan. Tough act to follow. I'm going to take you on a 10-minute journey here about what one team in professional sports has been up to, assuming that everything that Alan just said we agree with, which we do. We're an organization that lives and breathes in the community of Portland, Oregon, one of the most sustainable cities on the planet. It's in our DNA to be a part of the discussion about what we're going to do about climate change. Professional sports has an amazing leverage point to really take the power and influence that we have in sports, that we're marketing giants in our communities and regions, and use that leverage to change behaviors and values of the people that live in our community. So I'm going to show you a very short video. It's 1 minute. It's an Adidas commercial. So if you're a Nike fan, you have to just turn the other direction. But I thought they did a very good job here of showing you the power and influence of sports.
Holding on to his knee. Holding on to his knee and down.
Okay, so the volume wasn't very loud, which, of course, in my arena, it really matters a lot that we have a big, huge volume. But, you know, I mean, that's the reality of the world we live in. I mean, one player can go down and the entire city of Chicago stops and wonders, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to get through this? And it's really about recognizing that and then sort of using that as a leverage point to talk about what's happening on our planet. The NRDC needs to be thanked for putting together a great platform, but I wanted to highlight this. I think there's some copies outside, or there's links to it that can be made available. But this is a report that succinctly puts together a catalog of what's happening in the entire professional sports industry, thinking about how we're all going to taking efforts to save the planet. There's some an amazing amount of volume of work here, and the NRDC needs to, tremendous thanks for helping shape what we're actually doing in our industry. So Rose Garden Arena is a 20,000 seat facility that I help operate and manage on behalf of the Portland Trailblazers. And I'm going to give you some facts and figures just to kind of understand the context of our impact, because we recognize we have one. About 2 million visitors a year, over 200 events in a year, over 10 million kilowatt hours of power consumed, 14,000 CCFs of water, 200,000 therms of natural gas, 2 million pounds of waste. So you can think about those types of impacts. And this carbon footprint analysis that we did a scope 3 of our organization and arena is something that we've shared with our industry partners. And every arena, stadium, et cetera, will look pretty much like this, give or take a couple percentage points. This represented, when we did this scope 3 analysis, 20,000 metric tons of CO2. One thing that surprised us about this was that we thought the business travel element, which says 4%, would be the biggest because it's the planes traveling around with the teams and scouts and all that kind of stuff. But it actually wound up being transportation related. That's the biggest impact. And so I'm going to tell you and kind of work you through all this and talk to you about how we've tackled all this. But we figured out what our impact was, 20,000 metric tons, and we decided we were going to do something about it. So we have implemented aggressive goals, such as being a climate-positive organization, and looking at each one of these segments and tackling these segments one at a time. So in 2010, we were blessed to have the U.S. Green Building Council bless our facility, the Rose Garden Arena, as a LEED Gold existing building. It's the only one in the planet in professional sports, and it's something that we're very proud of, but it's just one step along the journey. That represented some things, and I'll cover them quickly. Massive energy efficiencies to this building. We're saving about 2.5 million kilowatt hours a year now on just energy efficiency projects alone. We are offsetting what we haven't been able to reduce, and all of our energy and natural gas into local projects in our region. Using the Bonneville Environmental Foundation as an organization that helps us find those credits and projects. This is the Middle Deschutes in Central Oregon. All of our water consumption is going towards reclamation projects to help these watersheds remain healthy and thriving. Our food, you think about sports, food is a big one. 90% of our food now is either local or organic. 90%. So What does that mean? It means a lot of work, trying to work with local industry providers and suppliers and farmers to make sure that we can actually get these products into our building. We have now multiple stands that are just Oregon only. So products that are only serving, right? How many people have been to sporting events? Almost all of you. $8, $10 hamburgers, $8 hot dogs. Think about a Dungeness crab burger that comes locally from Oregon. You're going to pay a little more of a premium on that. And guess what? People like it, and they pay for it, and they want to see it. Replacing all of the disposables, so all the disposables that you get your food and beverage on, with compostable products. So we alone helped our waste hauler, which is Republic or Allied, they used to be called, open up a composting facility in the state of Oregon locally because of the volume, 600 tons a year of food waste and compost material that goes to their facility. Rolling out recycling stations where there used to be trash cans in every level of the arena. 300 of these units had to be put in. So we are giving our fans an engagement opportunity to think about what they're putting into these containers. It's funny when you walk the concourse with families, et cetera, you see parents educating kids about what food waste and compost is and what's recycling, but often you see kids educating the parents about what, because in the schools are actually starting to integrate this a lot more than we are in other sectors. And then you often in Portland, this is just Portland, is you see people come through and pick out things and put them in different containers. It's just only in Portland. You know, we look at, this is a thermal image scan, we own one of these cameras, we just bought it because it makes sense. I mean, we look for things that are we're bleeding, you know, energy, et cetera, and fix them. Massive transportation-related investments. We've self-taxed ourselves to put transit and streetcar and light rail lines in and continue to help promote and support those as a fan engagement strategy. Putting in bike shelters and just really talking about we want people to bike to games. We used to have about 20 bikes a game. We put in some very simple shelters you see here, some security cameras. More importantly, we asked our fans, would you please bike to games? And we are now about 260 bikes a game. So we went from 20 to 260 by just basically asking people, that's what we want you to do. We've invested in electric vehicle charging stations. We now have 26 units. That's like three times more than any other place in our region that has them in one single site. What's exciting about this is we're out ahead of this. We're a great node for this because you can actually get a full charge and you're there for 3 or 4 hours at a time. But what we've seen is a dramatic spike of people actually purchasing electric vehicles now. And a lot of it is all related to infrastructure. Without the infrastructure, people are going to have a hurdle from purchasing them. So I'm going to give you some statistics quickly. These are just going to be graphs. It's just show you kilowatt hours for our events. And you see from 2008 when we decided to do a baseline all the way to 2012, that continues to come down. Same thing with your natural gas consumption. Same thing with water consumption. And our diversion rate has gone from about 38%, and we're actually at 90% now in 2013, but I'd wait for a whole year until I start talking about statistics. But that's an incredible diversion rate, and what's more important is the business case. So business case alone, and I'll get to the other points in a minute, since 2008, we've saved $1.5 million in energy, $300,000 in water savings, $500,000 in diversion strategies. So $2.3 million in savings at a cost of $560,000. I get asked this question, like, well, this must cost a lot. $560,000 outflow, that was consultant fees, that was implementing policies, procedures, all that kind of stuff. $2.3 million saved. We're on track to be well over $3 million this year. This is a business case if it's nothing else for you. But I will tell you more. Wait, there's more. Partnerships. In my world, this is a huge revenue driver. This opens up new markets that this industry has never seen before. We're in $2 million to $3 million a year now in new market partnerships that this organization has never been able to do. But because they're authentic and they have a genuine platform and there's an opportunity to engage with fans in a way that has never been seen before with greener products and greener services and a greener way of life, it has opened the door to revenue growth. Our footprint has been cut well over half since 2008. There's some great stories that gets to be talked about that, earned media opportunities, et cetera. It's enhanced the guest and fan experience. We do surveys. We understand and recognize we're in Portland, but the reality is we're seeing across the country in sports venues that the experience goes up. And then there's this huge community impact, which is so cool. We're asking people to bike to Blazer games. We're engaging with our community and our kids and planting trees and educating them on the importance of that and doing community gardens with them. And we put in interactive centers in our concourse to educate people on what this all means and why it's important to all of us. So what are we doing in addition to that? We're going beyond the four walls we're building. We want to be a carbon positive organization. We can only do so much. Some of those curves are starting to diminish the return. At some point, we need bigger engagement strategies. We're trying to help develop eco-districts. We need eco-cities, but we need to think about eco-districts first because the public can't get their head around what eco-cities are about. And eco-districts are hard enough, and there's a lot of legislation that needs to be done for that to happen. We've co-founded, as Alan said earlier, the Green Sports Alliance to share best practices with our colleagues in our industry. We joined a company called BICEP, which is Businesses for Innovative Climate Energy Policy. This is a lobbying, if you would, organization. You see those brands that are up on that. We just announced a climate change declaration in Washington, D.C. about 2 weeks ago. Those brands right there are all dedicated in the private sector to combat climate change. We're saying it's real, and we're doing the right things internally to our own organizations. We're asking the public policy leaders to clear the path for us to do more. There's a lot of work to be done. This is an example of an integration with one of the BICEP companies. Aspen Ski Area called me one day and said, on the cover of our sustainability report, we want to have you guys. This is Jerome Kersey. Some of you might remember him from the 90s with the Portland Trailblazers. And it's like, well, why? You know, people that received this report said the same thing. When you open it up, it actually explains. We're in this together. We're two unlikely people that have nothing in common necessarily other than we both want to do the right thing. Larger context, a guy like Steve Nash, who's very well recognized, telling Nike, I'm not going to endorse your product unless you make a shoe that's made of recycled content. You've got Derek Jeter, of all people, telling people at a climate forum or at an economic forum that climate change is real. And like Alan said earlier, the league offices are stepping in. My league office has sent letters to Congress saying climate change is real and it threatens the future of our industry and the future of our sports because sports was born outdoors on the playground. Thank you.
Excuse me. You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California Radio and our program, Greening the World Through Sports, with Alan Hershkovitz, Sports Greening Program, Justin Zoller, Portland Trailblazers, Robin Raj, Creative Director of the Citizens Group, Darby Hoover, Natural Resources Defense Council.
Okay, so now we're going to hear from Robin. If any of you watch a Philadelphia Eagles football game and the Eagles are in the red zone, 20-yard or closer to the goal line, and you look on the at the stands, you'll see a huge, along the line of the stands, it'll say, if we recycle, everyone wins. And that goes on national TV or on local TV whenever the Eagles are playing and they're on TV. Robin created that. If you're a man and you use a urinal and you see the sign that says recycle your beer here, put your cups in the right place. You'll also see giant signs that are like the size of this wall that show fans, like crazy fans painted up in green and wearing eagle feathers that say most Americans produce 3 pounds of waste, but these guys maybe more. And trash the Giants, trash the Redskins, but recycle your stuff here. Robin invented all that stuff. So I just want to give a shout-out to somebody that really inspires me, and Robin Raj.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for being very generous with your remarks. And I have to thank NRDC for making all of this possible, creating the vision and providing the resources, literally, to scale this. And really, that's how I want to use my time, to talk about achieving scale. And in order to have some perspective on that, I'll zoom back to 2003 when we first began, Alan and I, and a small group of us engaging with the Lurys, the owners of the Philadelphia Eagles. And it was an eye-opening experience for them. It was an eye-opening experience for us because we were going to school on them. And, understood that we couldn't staple on or impose these values. They had to come from within. And that's been a continual lesson. So, in the dialogue, in the discussion, Alan was able to surface facts. For example, He had done an audit with Darby's help, no doubt. And what they discovered was that bald eagle habitat was being cut down to make the toilet paper that went in the Philadelphia Eagles' bathrooms, right, that we all wiped our rear on. And when that crude but very specific fact was laid before the Lurie's, I remember it like it was yesterday, because Jeff and Christina looked at each other, and I think it was Christina who said, well, we can't have that, you know. And that led to the inquiry, Kimberly Clark. And as we've subsequently discovered, whether it's a major sports team or whether it's Walmart, who we've also worked with on their sustainability efforts, when the big dog talks, you know, everybody listens. The pressure, positive pressure in this case, on the supply chain to make changes. And then when you look, as I think many of us know, through that lens of sustainability at all your practices, suddenly you see the inefficiencies, you find the toxins, and you say, we can't have that. And so that created the ripple effect. It started with the one team, and I will show some of this work. It was fortunate that the Philadelphia Eagles color was green. So we started with our mission statement, and we're able to incorporate terms like environmental performance. Performance is a sports term, and talking about performance on and off the field. So the athletic performance, the environmental performance, and that became embedded in the culture of the team. And then, you know, having presence throughout the stadium. And then you can start to have fun. And I jump ahead because one thing we always talk about, one of the lessons learned, is policy before promotion. Yeah, of course the policies have to be in place, whether it was recycling the oil from the fat fryers to run biodiesel for the transportation, whether it was solar-powered scoreboards, whether it was their paper policy, the toxins on the field, all of that. But then you can start to engage fans and do it in a way that's in keeping with the nature of sports, which means fun, which means kind of an ESPN irreverent tone we took. And I think that created the lift in terms of engaging fans. You know, not San Francisco left coasters, but meat and potato Philadelphia Eagles fans, right? And that started to get to build some momentum. And this is the signage that Alan referred to. So these materials are fixed within the new stadium. There was also video elements like recycled play of the day, finding every fun opportunity to remind people why this was important and place it in the context of sports. And then we zoom ahead, 2005, 2004, when Robert Redford, through Alan, got the board at NRDC, saw some of this work. It was really their light switch that went off, Robert Redford, that said, that's how we mainstream green, through our cultural leaders, through sports and entertainment. And I will not show the illegal video. I was going to, but I think in the interest of time, I won't. But I'll skip ahead quickly.
Too bad.
Should I show it? Okay, I have a minute
it
clip.
It happens every spring.
This is a minute clip.
Growth. Renewal. Another generation. New potential. It's true of baseball. It's true of our planet. And that's why the new collaboration developing this spring between Major League Baseball and the Natural Resources Defense Council holds so much promise. Major League Baseball has the opportunity to involve its teams and its fans to encourage recycling, conserve energy, reduce costs, and protect America's wild places. It's a chance for owners and teams to do well by doing good. I believe this environmentally intelligent work can create real goodwill among employees, fans, and all of Major League Baseball's many, many audiences. The fact is, when we take care of the planet, everybody wins. Let's join together to make sustainable practices and environmental responsibility part of America's national pastime. This spring, and for springtimes to come.
So this was a severely edited version of a four-minute video.
Right, right. But I think the point here is that, again, trying not to impose the values from outside. Major League Baseball joining with an enviro group could be controversial, and it wasn't easy, by the way. It took a couple years before it was fully embraced. But by placing it in the economic value, the social value, and, yes, the environmental value, it was adopted, and both top-down and bottom-up, because we had to prove the case again and again. So with Bob Fischer's help, with the Oakland A's, you had teams that were leaning forward. That's still the case today, by the way. Some teams, you know, neutral, some leaning back, but more and more the momentum is leaning forward, taking these because the business case is emerging in such a undeniable way. And additionally, you know, creating the tools for the teams. As Alan mentioned, these green guides were location specific. So once you get past the why, the how, the actual mechanics, right down to how they do procurement, how they write their contracts, we share best practices, and the Green Sports Alliance is enabling that further. And that has had the ripple effect that Alan talked about at the top, with all of these leagues embracing the initiative. And this piece is going to serve Justin. Here we go.
Peter McLaughlin, Paul Allen, our owner, care very deeply about our community. They want to win games, but they also want to inspire our community to win on the environment.
What we've been able to do here is to have an owner and an organization that is far-reaching and will involve itself in incorporating new technologies, bringing new ideas, and certainly this facility for the last 5 or 6 years has done just that.
Through the leadership of Vulcan Sports Entertainment, the Portland Trailblazers were inspired to become the world's first LEED Gold certified professional building of its type in the world.
A lot of the guests who come to Blazer games are really starting to catch on to what we're doing.
So our commitment is to make sure that they have fresh local product wherever possible.
So in our parking garages, we've installed motion sensing lights, and it is saving us well over 35% of our energy in the garages.
When you get the sustainability bug, it's contagious. It ripples through the entire organization, permeates the culture of that organization, so that everybody has a piece in what we're doing here.
So I'll just wrap up and turn it over to Darby simply by listing off a handful of the many lessons learned. Policy before promotion, I mentioned. Obviously, creating a big tent, building the sense of collective empowerment. You know, a lot has been said about the three P's, people, planet, profit. At Citizen, my agency, we talk about the fourth P, passion, igniting the passion. And in the context of sports, there's actually a fifth P, and that is pride, the pride of teams on the ground, local pride. And the more you can tie that pride at the local level, I think that creates the lift, the brand lift, and the sponsors coming alongside, and everybody quite, in fact, winning. So with that, Darby?
You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California Radio and our program, Greening the World Through Sports. And I want the audience to start thinking now, because in about 10 minutes, we will be asking you your questions to ask for the panel. So think now the questions you'd like to ask, and we will be asking those in approximately 10 minutes. Darby?
Before Darby goes, I just want to say a couple words. So when you watch the Oscars, when you watch the Grammys, when you watch the Super Bowl, when you watch the World Series, when you watch the Stanley Cup, when you watch the NBA playoffs and finals, when you watch the All-Star games of all those leagues, I want you to say two words to yourself, Darby Hoover. Because the truth is that Darby Hoover is the technical backbone of a lot of projects at NRDC, but in particular our sports work. She is playing an instrumental role in overseeing everything from the cutlery that's bought to the toilet paper used by the portable toilets used by the construction crew building the sets for the Oscars. Nothing goes unnoticed by Darby Hoover. This person really deserves huge kudos for the attention. And remember, there is no one big thing that's going to deal with all our ecological pressures. Small things lead to big changes. And when it comes to the details and the small things about environmental initiatives, the person you're going to hear from right now is in a league of her own.
Wow. Thank you very much, Alan. It's true that I'm inordinately obsessed with toilet paper, so we'll move right past that and into some of the details. So we've already heard about NRDC's involvement in beginning the sports greening movement in 2004. We're involved now as the primary or one of the primary environmental advisors to all the leagues listed here. We helped found the Green Sports Alliance. And in July 2012, the NRDC Sports Greening Project won the Beyond Sports Sport for the Environment Award. So this has really become quite a movement, and we're really proud to be part of it. But I want to go back a little bit, do a tiny bit of recap, and a little bit of a deeper dive into what it is that we're doing and why we're doing it and how we're doing it. So why are we excited about our work with sports and entertainment organizations? For one thing, it supports NRDC's mission, which is really to preserve nature, which is the ultimate source of all economic value and social well-being. No commerce, no culture, no sports are possible without clean air and water, without fertile topsoil, without a chemically stable atmosphere, without raw materials for food and energy. And that's really part of NRDC's mission, and our sports project is very much aligned with that vision. We have a three-pronged approach to how we view this work. And the first prong is really making real on-the-ground changes. So professional sports arenas and stadiums are often among the most prominent and sizable buildings in hundreds of cities throughout the nation where these sports are played. So greening these facilities, as we've been hearing, provides real important environmental benefits in terms of on-the-ground footprint reductions, energy efficiency, recycling, water conservation, and so forth. And lest this cartoon be perceived as some sort of slam on the Anway Center, I do want to point out that they are a LEED Gold certified facility with many impressive characteristics, which you can read about in the Game Changer report that Justin referred to. So those on-the-ground initiatives have been very successful, but often they have been enacted and developed individually by different venues and different teams working on their own. So part of what we've tried to do at NRDC is aggregate these individual successes and initiatives into a more organized community effort. So one of the recent projects we've been working on, for example, is helping leagues and teams gather data on what energy they're consuming, what water they're consuming, what their waste and recycling profile look like, and measure environmental progress league-wide. We went to MLB and said, you guys should measure some of this stuff. It's kind of crazy that you measure everything else associated with your sport, and you have numbers and statistics on every aspect of baseball except how much you're recycling. They said, oh, yeah, we really should measure that. So that's an ongoing initiative and one that's really in process of developing. I'm going to make a confession, which is that before I started doing this work, I really did not know very much about sports. But as somebody who didn't identify as a sports fan, although of course I do now, before doing that, it really put me in a good position to understand how important sports are in our culture and in our society. So I can really see how much attention people pay to sports and how culturally significant sports are. And part of the reason that I am now a fan is that I understand that that passion that people have for sports can really translate to passion for the environment and passion for those kinds of issues. Who follows sports? About half of everybody, it turns out. So in America, this Pew survey asked folks if they followed sports news very or somewhat closely. And you can look down these demographics that may or may not be readable depending how closely you're seated. But they break down race, age, education,
gender,
where in the country people are from. And it turns out that about half of people identify as following sports news very or somewhat closely across all these barriers, so across political, religious, socioeconomic, and educational, and regional barriers. This is something that's a uniting force. So the audiences for sports come from all these different demographics. And sports and entertainment industries are not just an important part of our culture, but they're obviously an important part of our economy. So you can now see my very advanced Photoshop skills, where the original photo had, I think, Shaq holding the world, but I wanted to make his quote even more robust. So as Alan mentioned, sports is one of our largest economic sectors in the U.S., representing up to $450 billion a year in economic activity. So if we're working with a stadium or a team, we're not just working with them. We're working with their entire supply chain. We're working with from vehicles to paper to energy to food to textiles to Pepsi to Reebok. All these different industries meet on a football field, a hockey rink, a basketball court. And the world's largest industries pay millions of dollars to affiliate with sports because they know that sports are hugely influential to the culture of the marketplace and to society as a whole. So by involving teams, we're able to activate the second prong of our approach, which is to work with supply chains and work with suppliers to change the global marketplace and to change the characteristics of the products and services that are being offered. If we, as NRDC, go to a big supplier and ask them to engage on this kind of level, we may or may not be successful. But when teams or venues that are valued customers and sometimes have sponsor relationships with these folks go and ask them, what is this product made from, where did it come from, and what are the environmental costs of using it, those questions are going to be answered and engaged with in a way that we can't activate on our own. So by working with sports teams and venues and leagues, NRDC is able to advance our environmental mission of influencing an entire supply chain. And as was mentioned, there's obviously a huge potential for outreach to fans and society at large. So the third prong of our approach is really getting NRDC's environmental message out to non-traditional audiences in non-traditional ways. The season views, for those of you who aren't familiar with that term, means attendees plus television viewers, and if you watch every single game, every one of those counts as a season view. I think I can squeeze in a video, so I'm going to try to do that. Whoops. But I'm not going to do it in a way that I know what I'm doing. So we have a couple. We mentioned that there were PSAs that have been developed for view on in stadiums and also on television. I'm going to show two really quick ones that are going to be 30 seconds each.
How does the NBA play green? With the help of the Natural Resources Defense Council. Together, we're sweating every part of the NBA experience to keep the environmental footprint small and the excitement big. From solar on the roof, to more recycling stations, to less wasteful packaging, to low-flow water restrooms. It all adds up. Join the green team at nba.com/green and nrdc.org/sports.
So you can see that NBA PSA on NBA TV. You can occasionally see it on broadcast TV. And we did a similar kind of thing with the National Hockey League.
Hockey depends on ice. And ice depends on water. That's why the NHL has teamed with the Natural Resources Defense Council. We're conserving the water we use and helping to safeguard its future. Because Earth's most valuable resource is pure, clean water, preferably frozen. Join the team at nhl/green and nrdc.org/sports.
So getting these messages out, again, in these non-traditional ways and non-traditional venues is really something that's a really exciting part of this work for us. So just quickly, since I know we kind of glossed over this and not necessarily everybody knows, what even is greening? Well, greening is the process of reviewing your day-to-day operations and supply chain relations with a focus on reducing the ecological impacts. It's a journey. It's not a destination. It's not a checklist. It's something that you undertake as an ongoing activity and a way of making decisions about the products and services that you buy and offer. It is about carbon. It's not only about carbon. It's also about water, biodiversity, food, so many other things. And it's really not about breaking the bank. If it's not financially sustainable, ultimately it's really not going to be environmentally sustainable either. As Justin and other folks mentioned, In September 2012, NRDC produced a report, Game Changer, which was the first ever compilation of what the sports group, professional sports teams, leagues, and venues are doing with environmental initiatives throughout North America. There's some really impressive case studies in this report. The executive summary is available out there as a handout. We'd encourage you to download and check out some of the great case studies. I'm going to whip through and just show you some impressive words that tell you about all the things that are listed in the report. But I do want to note that some of the highlights are that the commissioners of all the pro leagues have made commitments to environmental stewardship. Virtually every professional sports venue has developed a recycling program and or composting. 18 stadiums or arenas have achieved LEED green building certifications. Many others are on the path to LEED. 18 venues have installed on-site solar. A few have on-site wind turbines as well. 68 teams have energy efficiency programs. 38 have renewable energy for at least some of their operations. And generally, professional teams have saved millions of dollars just in the past few years alone through energy efficiency, water conservation, waste reduction. There's potential for huge annual savings. Some of the low-hanging fruit include things like getting energy audits, getting waste audits. Another thing about waste is if you're going to talk about developing an environmental initiative, pretty much the first thing the public's going to look for is, do you have a recycling bin? So you got to start with those recycling bins right off, and I love showing pictures of the Rose Garden recycling bins because they are four tops that say recycling, recycling, compost, landfill, and that's just such a beautiful, unless you have two composts now, but it's a beautiful priority system and one that I think really tells people what it is that they're doing and encourages them to engage. NRDC is also starting to profile collegiate sports, and we're going to be producing a second Game Changer report on the successes of college athletics and recreation. It's going to be coming out at the upcoming Green Alliance Summit. We talked about the NRDC Greening Advisor, which is a tool that's available for anyone to use free. It helps tell it how to green your organization. This is the version we've customized for sports. As Alan mentioned, one of the greatest challenges of the 21st century is preserving the functional integrity of the biosphere. No one single act is going to help us solve global warming. The sports teams and venues and leagues are engaging in many, sometimes seemingly small initiatives, but they're really adding up. We also can't get everything done through politics. So when a nonpartisan, culturally influential sector like sports starts adopting greener procurement and operations and starts incorporating renewable energy and recycling and composting and organic food and recycled content paper and water-conserving fixtures, that sends a really powerful pro-environmental message up supply chains and out to the public. And it gives the message that greening really doesn't have to just be work, it's also play. We can bring environmental messages to places where people relax and where they recreate, and that really is an important way for us to shift consciousness and culture. Here's how to learn more. We'd like you to think about supporting this effort by going to whatever your local teams are doing on the environmental space and check out their websites, like and share what they're sharing on social media, participate in fan initiatives, pass on materials to anybody you think might be interested. We really think this work is a key part of building sustainable communities. And to me, sustainable communities means creating ecologically intelligent places where people can live, work, and play together. So another important way you can support this work is, of course, to share and adopt environmental initiatives like this in your own workplaces and homes and communities, and to think of it as something that can be fun.
Thank you, Darby. You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California Radio and our program, excuse me, Greening the World Through Sports. We now have time for questions from the audience.
Let me just say, before we get to the questions, this was a fun panel, but I really can't overstate how hard this work is. The amount of detail, I mean, we're at this 24/7. I've been doing this work, environmental work, for 35 years, and this has been the most challenging initiative I've ever worked on in my life. It's also been the most satisfying. We have reduced by millions of pounds global warming emissions, by millions of gallons. Water have been conserved. We've helped initiate recycling programs. But working with these leagues, I mean, these are some of the most iconic brands in the universe. So we have to overlay an extraordinary market and cultural sensitivity to how these leagues work with detailed assessments. Every single day we get inquiries about a product or a pitch that a league or a team is being asked to consider because of its ecological attributes. And we do research literally on plastic cups, on paper products, on bagasse, on, you know, what. So it's just an extraordinarily substantial effort. So I know this has been a fun panel, but I really don't want to diminish the work that the people on this panel and certainly my colleagues at NRDC are doing to identify ways. And we just had a long meeting just yesterday about antibiotics in poultry, about how to integrate with the concessionaires to get them to sell what the market looks like and specifically what kind of antibiotics they could get poultry without, what kind of antibiotics they're going to have to deal with. You know, forget pork. We're never going to get to that one in my lifetime, I think. I don't know. But I really just, you know, and again, one thing I just want to remind everybody is there is, you know, small things lead to big changes. And, you know, we started out literally with toilet paper. We started out with toilet paper. And the toilet paper has led to, you know, the green sports movement, which is now an international movement. So with that, oh, by the way, I do want to give a couple shout-outs. We have an Olympic gold medalist in the audience here, Jill Savory, who won the gold medal in 1996 for synchronized swimming. And that's a good attribute, but what's more important is she is the sustainability advisor to the America's Cup initiative that's happening here in San Francisco, so she's overseeing sustainability for the America's Cup. Thank you for transferring your visibility and influence from synchronized swimming to saving the planet. Todd Benson with WildAid did a great project with the National Basketball Association. The NBA is huge in China. When I said that the NBA has 400 million people, they have 800 million fans around the world, 400 million connected by social media. Obviously, they're not all in the United States since we only have 300 million people. And what Todd and his group has done is done a great outreach on using on the NBA coming out against the use of animal parts for medicinal purposes. He's leveraging the messaging of the NBA to save biodiversity. And Joe Kerala is also here from the Green Bear, who is also one of the founders and members of the board of the Green Sports Alliance. I'm sure there's other, many, all of you are heroes out there, but these three folks, I think, you know, from my perspective, deserve a particular shout-out. So now we're going to take some questions.
Thank you. Well, San Francisco does not like to take a back seat, even to Portland. So could someone please say something about the Giants in Pac Bell Park or Willie Mays Park or whatever it is, and also about the Warriors coming over? I think we have a wonderful opportunity with that.
I'll first just point out that MLB offers a Green Glove Award each year to the team that exhibits the highest recycling rates. And while some teams have been bravely attempting to adopt a meaningful challenge, the Giants have taken home that award significantly for many years in a row.
Five
years in a row, and I understand that they have it proudly displayed next to other trophies of the game.
As it states in the Game Changers report, I'll read this one piece. The Giants now involve all venue stakeholders. They involve all their partners, given the complex nature of ballpark services. So from PG&E to their building facilities management, center plate, which is hospitality concessions, their irrigation through Toro, Recology. So it is truly integrated, and that's the reason that they've gotten that award and that acknowledgement. So they are no slouches.
And the Warriors?
The Warriors are
up and coming.
Designing a new stadium. There's a lot of environmentalists involved trying to figure out how they want to make it the greenest arena in the world. Mm-hmm. That's the message coming to us. They've asked us, NRDC, to get involved in helping to work on designing it. Frankly, we hear so much about the Giants so often that we kind of like ignore talking about them because we want to publicize the good work that's happening elsewhere. But since we're in San Francisco, we do have to give a shout out to the fact that, you know, what's happening here, really, the world would be in a lot better place if more places replicated what's happening in San Francisco.
Yeah, and the A's helped start it through Bob Fischer. Right. I mean, he was one of the earliest movers, yeah, as we referenced.
Thank you very much, Alan, for the shout out. I spend a lot of my time working on major sporting events like the Olympics and now the America's Cup. And the issues that you presented are the same, but the challenges are slightly different than permanent venues, where you've got a long time horizon to slowly implement, or not so slowly, implement major projects, see the savings, invest, and so forth. We've had 2 years start to finish with 11 events around the world and now the big shows this summer. It's a very different type of atmosphere, but again, the same issues, the same supply chain challenges and so forth. Do you see yourselves getting into this major sporting event area?
Well, we do all the jewel events. Now, some jewel events, like the U.S. Open Tennis Championship, is happening at the same location. So we could put in place recycling infrastructure, and we know it's going to stay there. And we could educate the staff at that facility, and we know that that education and that information will be, you know, that internal capacity will be retained by that organization. But right now, we don't know who's going to be, you know, in the Stanley Cup. We don't know who's going to be in the NBA Finals. We don't know who's going to be in the World Series. We don't know who's going to be in the Super Bowl, although we know where the Super Bowl will be played. So, you know, there's some things we can't do because it's on such short notice. Darby, do you want to chime in on this?
Yeah, you know, my philosophy on the events is that we think of it the same way I think of camping, which is we try to leave everything cleaner than we found it. We try to figure out opportunities to put in place something that's permanent in terms of an infrastructure improvement or a community relation or something that's going to help that community be able to continue the efforts that we put in place through the event, which is challenging. It takes some more work up front. It takes building those connections. But when we do work with events, we try to leave something behind in the venue that helps with the ongoing efforts.
But we're working now on the 2014 Super Bowl, trying to make it a zero-waste initiative. When we go in, like with the All-Star Games, we always get energy efficiency audits done, Louisiana Superdome, New Orleans Arena, Staples Center. We start out with energy efficiency audits, which provide lasting benefits for those venues for years to come, you know, information. The Olympics, you know where the Olympics are going to be years in advance, so there's a lot that you could do there. You know, I mean, but when you're talking about the World Series, that's a tough one because sometimes you literally do not know until a week before where that event is going to happen. And then suddenly, bam, you know, you got to interact, you know, with the stadium owner, which is a good thing that our information is sort of percolating throughout the league because at least we could, you know, build up a foundation that they could build on.
Right. And the institutional knowledge, operational knowledge often exists with the venues. So, you know, for example, in 2014, Super Bowl will be at MetLife Stadium, and they don't know the teams it'll play, but they know it will be at MetLife Stadium, and they're already very actively planning activities. For example, they've thrown the gauntlet down and said they want it to be the largest mass transit Super Bowl in history.
You know, real quickly, I just spent time down at the University of Oregon and talking about track town or U.S. Track and field championships, those kinds of things, and extremely challenging, but they were able to do it. And so the Green Sports Alliance is kind of thinking about that as a platform, able to integrate what they've been able to do and share that amongst festivals and other kind of one-off events like that. So I think we can do it. I just think that it's a little more challenging than, you're right, a standalone arena, stadium, et cetera.
And apologies for the noise, but since we're doing this event, we're trying to leave it cleaner than we found it. That's all green infrastructure being installed behind us. So.
Unfortunately, we've reached that time in our program where we have time for one last question.
Thank you. My name's Kellen Klein, and I work for Future 500, an environmental nonprofit here in the city focused in stakeholder engagement. And I've been a fan of this movement and following it for quite some time, and from my perspective, the general response has been overwhelmingly positive. And so I'm curious, have you felt pushback or opposition to this movement from any respective stakeholders or parties?
You know, when I have to give a lot of credit to Bud Selig because, you know, when he came out, we worked with Major League Baseball for 2 years before going public about our collaboration. And he did get pushback because he canvassed the owners. He, you know, there were some owners who felt that NRDC was a radical, extremist environmental group. We like to think of ourselves that way. But actually, we do a lot of, you know, collaborations, and we're kind of gentle in a lot of ways. But, I mean, frankly, the biggest pushback has been, I won't name the team, but the owner said to me, I'd like to do this, but I don't want it to cost me any money. And I said, okay, well, we could do that. You know, you start with an energy efficiency audit, you start with a water audit, you start with a waste audit, you know, you reduce their costs. But that's the biggest barrier we face. And then, of course, I guess the biggest battle we faced, Robin and I, was with Kimberly Clark, because they had a multi-year contract with the Philadelphia Eagles to supply them with timber-based toilet paper from Eagle Habitat. Yes, we were. They were. People were wiping their asses with Eagle Habitat at Eagle Stadium. Not a good branding. It's a branding liability, the way we looked at it. And they, to their credit, changed that immediately. But that was the big battle with some of the vendors. Some of the vendors, you know, that have supplied, but not from the leagues or the team owners. I mean, they see this as a branding protection.
Yeah, can I add on that, Alan? And I'll be very succinct. The answer to your question is sure. You know, you have to consider any business decision that you make, particularly when it comes to major initiatives that you'd be taking on like this is. But the answer is as we navigated through this journey, we saw a business case, operational savings, number one, first and foremost, and nobody can say that that's a bad decision to make. Secondarily, there is the new markets and sponsorships. It doesn't matter what market you're in the United States or in the world, you're going to open yourselves up to those opportunities. There's a community engagement platform that just inherently gets created. You can use it or not use it. If you're in Houston, maybe you won't, but in other markets, and I think in Houston particularly, you would. There's a brand enhancement that Alan just talked about. It gives you an opportunity to be known and recognized internationally, not just in your local community. And that brand is extremely important to any professional sports team or their venues and the markets they live in. So the answer to this is there is no downside to it.
You know, let me just end by saying this. Some of the greatest environmental advocates and most influential are the commissioners of professional sports leagues in the United States. I think the single most influential environmental advocate in all of sports worldwide in history is Bud Selig. And I have the information to prove that. What he has done, what he has opened up, and then David Stern and Gary Bettman. Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the National Hockey League, went on CNN and talked about lakes freezing later and melting earlier and how global warming is going to disrupt hockey. And they have taken the bull by the horns. The NHL is producing a sustainability report. They're measuring energy, water, waste. So is the NBA. So is Major League Baseball. We have great champions, no pun intended, in professional sports as it concerns environmental stewardship. And we really have to be very, very thankful that they're using the visibility and the leverage of these iconic leagues on behalf of environmental stewardship. And I really, you know, as long as I live, I will always thank these commissioners for supporting our cause.
As your chair, I know this movement can go nationally and internationally. And just from a personal perspective, I was born and raised in Alabama, and I learned all about my football and baseball in Alabama. So we've got a big nation ahead of us, lots of work to do, but I think this movement will move forward faster than we really think it may be moving or we want it to move. So my thanks to Alan Hershkovitz, who's Director of Sports Greening Program, Natural Resources Defense Council, Justin Zoller, Portland Trailblazers, Robin Raj, Founder and Creative Director of Citizen Group, and Darby Hoover, the National Resources Defense Council. See my Alabama accents coming back. I'm Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Forum, and this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than 110 years of enlightened discussion. I haven't been here for all of those discussions. In the know is adjourned.